The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you from a very cold Johannesburg, -1 degree here at the moment. I think you're exactly the opposite, aren't you?
We are, Booker Tov. We are definitely in certain summery weather, not quite the heat of summer, but certainly heading in that direction. Howard, I feel obliged as an avid Formula One fan to help you with the circuit in Canada, if you don't mind.
Absolutely, yes.
And it's named after Gilles Villeneuve.
Yes, thank you. That was the one. Wasn't that what I said? No.
Yeah, well, almost. I think you were almost getting the Gilles Villeneuve. Mm. Yeah, he drove for Ferrari, amongst other teams. And, of course, his son Jacques was also a great Formula One driver. But that's not what we're here to talk about. I've got two little snippets that I wanted to discuss before we get into the main topics of conversation. The first of which is just a great piece of news, which was a basketball game, seemingly kind of under the radar, but nonetheless there, and that took place between Morocco and Israel. The national sides of Morocco and Israel held at a gymnasium not too far from Rabat. And in this particular case, the girls' teams played against each other, and it was the Moroccan team that came out on top in this particular encounter, relatively close score in the end, 62-58, the very first time that an Arab female team has played against an Israeli national team and in their country. And this just took place in the framework of a meeting that was taking place at the same time to somehow help to normalize sports relations between the two countries in the context of the recent agreement that was signed to normalize diplomatic relations. And this was an agreement between the Israeli Basketball Association and the Royal Moroccan Basketball Federation. And of course, the game where the Moroccan girls came out on top. But next time, I'm sure that the Israeli girls will hold their own. Perhaps we'll even have a home game for the Israeli girls to play here in Israel against Morocco. That would be a great one for us to watch. The other little snippet that I wanted to talk about was the recent vote at the shareholder meeting of Alphabet, which of course is the Google parent company. And the shareholders were asked to vote on a proposal against Google's work on the Nimbus project. The Nimbus project is a project that was initiated by the Israeli government last year sometime in order to move essentially Israel's data, government data, to a cloud environment. This is a 4 billion shekel project that was put out to tender, and that Google and Amazon ultimately came out on top, beating out Oracle and Microsoft to get involved in this project. It's a massive project for cloud computing, and this is an Israeli government project. So the proposal at the Alphabet meeting was actually put forward by an individual by the name of Gabriel Schubiner, and he is an artificial intelligence engineer, employee of Google, and obviously also a shareholder. And he's a lead activist in the organization called No Tech for Apartheid. So we're understanding where this is all going given the nature of that particular organization. And he put to the shareholders meeting the following in a pre-recorded message: I'm deeply troubled by Google's recent efforts to sign contracts with militaries and policing agencies. I'm proud to speak to you today about a historic shareholder resolution calling on Alphabet to reassess the risks of these dangerous contracts to our users, shareholders, and the company's reputation and finances. So we start off talking about policing and military agencies. Then he goes on to say, Palestinian families live every day under deeply intrusive surveillance and in fear of assault or being forced out of their homes. The Project Nimbus contract will further enable Israel's oppressive tactics and discrimination against Palestinians. My Jewish heritage and history guides my belief that Palestinians deserve to live in peace and safety, as do all people.
Has he been
Gabriel Schubiner,
wow,
a Jewish Google employee and lead activist in the organization called No Tech for Apartheid. Now, this was put to the shareholders meeting of the Alphabet shareholders. And let's start with those who voted in favor of this particular resolution put forward by Gabriel Schubiner. 55,302,000 shares in favor of the proposal, which sounds like a lot. Mm. And it's obviously not 55 million individuals because many of those individuals hold multiple shares. However, in accordance with the director's recommendation, the Alphabet Board of Directors' recommendation to vote against the resolution, 544,653,000 shares voted against. So almost 10 times the number of those who voted in favor actually opposed the resolution. Good on you, Alphabet shareholders, for opposing this particular resolution. It's interesting to talk a little bit more about the work that has gone on within Google in Israel to give the people like Gabriel Schubiner, who is, as I've said before, an artificial intelligence engineer currently based, I believe, at the Seattle facility of Google, to give people like him the opportunity to do the work that they're doing. And this whole idea that Project Nimbus is really all about individual Palestinians who are suffering all kinds of unmentionable hardships at the hands of the Israeli government, of course, is a little bit of a stretch of the imagination. I don't necessarily want to get now into the whole issue of what the Israeli government is or is not doing to the Palestinians and what the Palestinian Authority is or is not doing to the Palestinians and how we're trying to work towards a situation of coexistence where one people can respect the rights of the other people to be here and to live here in peace and security and vice versa. Let's not get into all of that right now. But this is just, I think, just a snippet of just a piece of what goes on within private companies. And I'm delighted that on this particular occasion, the board of directors of Alphabet not only recommended against it, but indeed the shareholders supported that too.
Absolutely unbelievable. And just the language used is so bizarre that you just wonder if they've ever even been to Israel. This story also absolutely fascinated me. Russia has summoned Israeli ambassador to Russia for an explanation about the attack on the Damascus airport that has, of course, and we've spoken about this, that caused extensive damage. So, I mean, it's just so ironic that Russia is saying, reprimanding Israel for this. But give us the context here.
So let's just paint a picture here. There's a war going on in Ukraine. Israel, behind the scenes, is trying to protect itself in its local neck of the woods against arms and munitions which are being shipped in from Iran, mostly via Syria through Damascus Airport in the most part. And we know that Israel is very active in attacking the shipments, or trying at least to do whatever it can to limit the shipments and the damage that those shipments might cause in the fullness of time. So the Russians feel that the next most important action in the context of all of these things that are going on in the world is to summon Israeli ambassador to Russia, Alexander Ben Zvi, who was called in yesterday by the country's foreign minister to provide clarifications on the strike on Damascus International Airport that took place last week, that has been widely attributed to Israel. No confirmation has been made, given, or received by the Israeli government. But of course, the Russians understand, at least as far as they're concerned, that this was done by Israel. And apparently the Russian Deputy Foreign Minister Mikhail Bogdanov had expressed to Alexander Ben Zvi Moscow's deep concern regarding the attack. Why is this such a big issue for Russia? Well, I think in the first part, it sort of shows Russia up a little bit, because Russia is very much entrenched in Syria, supposedly providing hardware to help protect the Syrian regime. And of course, the Israelis are coming in almost at will. And we've spoken so many times about attacks that happen on Russia, on Syrian soil, and many of them also involving areas where Russians are active. So I think that this is a little bit embarrassing for the Russians that this has actually happened right there on their watch. But I think the other point is that it seems like extensive damage was indeed done to Damascus International Airport, including not only damage to the runway, but apparently damage also to a terminal building and also damage to potentially to radar systems and other equipment at the airport. And we understand that some of the damage that was done to the terminal building involves a terminal building that is exclusively used by senior military personnel from Iran and Hezbollah traveling to Syria. So there is apparently such a thing at Damascus International Airport, and apparently this was the building that was damaged. So it couldn't become more, it couldn't be more pinpointed than that. If you think about things that Israel might wish to target in order to really send a message to Iran and Hezbollah, and potentially also to Russia, then the damage that was done to that particular terminal, which they know is used by Iran and by Hezbollah representatives traveling to and from Syria, that was the one that was really struck. But of course, damage to the runway as well. Apparently, the runways are even separated between civilian air traffic and military air traffic.
That's a proper system they have going there.
It's just quite amazing. So there has been a strong condemnation coming out of Russia against this particular attack. And in fact, there was a statement that was issued last Friday by the Russian Foreign Ministry spokesman, which called on Israel to stop this vicious practice, in inverted commas, of targeting civilian infrastructure. We know that some of that civilian infrastructure is very much in a gray area of, is this really civilian or is it potentially military? So, yeah, just a fascinating.
And of course, Russia saying that. I mean, Russia, who is targeting, who is decimating Ukraine as we speak. It's just incredible.
A little ironic.
The other thing is, as far as I recall, and you and I spoke about it some, it might even been years ago, maybe last year, where Israel and Russia had formed an agreement that Iran would only be remain in certain parts of Syria so as not to impact on Israel. The fact that Israel finds itself in a position where it needs to deal with this means that that agreement is really not being adhered to.
Well, I think there are two separate issues. I agree with you, and I recall us having spoken about that. But I think that that's all really about Iranian positions within southern Syria and the extent to which they are closely have close proximity to the Israeli border. Mm. But what we're talking about here and the focus on Damascus Airport is, of course, it's just this massive shipment of arms and ammunition, which seems to be endless, coming in and out of Iran, being shipped in through Syria, either for use within Syria, or perhaps more importantly and of more concern, for use ultimately by Hezbollah in Lebanon. And we know that there are massive quantities of arms and ammunition that are being shipped in via Damascus Airport and then go on to Hezbollah. So I think that this is an attempt by Israel to somehow try to stop that particular flow of weapons, and so many attacks carried out against Damascus Airport and areas around the Damascus Airport to try and target the actual arms and ammunition that have been coming in. Israel seems to have slightly adjusted its tactic, because this is not the first attack that has taken place to damage the runway at Damascus Airport, but there's no doubt that that has put a real stop to the flow of traffic from Iran, because there's no possible way that planes can land at the moment. And I know that two or three weeks ago, there was an attack that was carried out that also seemingly purposefully damaged the runway. It took a few weeks for them to repair that. This one seems to be taking a lot longer, and hence I think the reason why Russia has jumped up and made its point about how angry it is. I'm guessing it also limits the ability of Russia to fly equipment and personnel in and out of Syria due to the damage of that airport and that runway. And potentially that's why Syria is really jumping up and expressing its frustration on this point.
Israel, Egypt and European Union yesterday signed a memorandum of understanding to supply Israeli gas to Europe. What are the main points of this understanding?
So with apologies to those who heard me talk about this yesterday afternoon, but I think that the story is sufficiently large for those followers of the morning program also to be briefed about this, because I think this is a massive, massive achievement. And we know that there have been representatives of European Union and European countries traveling around Israel during the course of this week, and I discussed that earlier in the week. But yesterday, there was this meeting in Cairo where Israel, Egypt, and representatives from the European Union signed this agreement for the supply of Israeli gas to Europe. We know that Europe is hastily searching for alternative supplies of gas, given the fact that their main supplier, Russia, has become very, very unreliable and they really need to look elsewhere. They have got a number of different sources, and we can't pretend that Israeli gas will fulfill all of the requirements that are currently or have until recently been coming from Russia. But this is nonetheless a massive moment for Israeli gas, because what's going to happen is that Israeli gas will be supplied to Egypt via an existing pipeline that exists between Israel and Egypt. In Egypt, they have a facility to liquefy the gas, and once the gas has been liquefied, it can essentially then be loaded onto ships and then shipped over to Europe for use by the European countries who are currently running very short of gas due to the Russian issue. So this is economically a massive moment for Israel and for Israeli gas, the Israeli gas industry. But I think it's also a different moment in terms of our relationship with Europe and with Egypt. And we've discussed that a little bit, that it's a welcome change to have countries coming to Israel because they need some natural resources that we have, rather than only looking to try and get involved in peace processes and potentially taking advantage of technology. So I think that this is a very welcome and a very, very massive moment in Israel's history.
Indeed, it is. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. Wishing you a fantastic weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and we'll catch you on Monday morning.